Morning, everyone. Welcome. John, this is the minutes that we prepared from the December 10th, 2014 bargaining session for your review.
Stacy, do you want to grab one? That side.
I did too. I got to do something on that. That's true.
Let me just make sure the date, verify the date. Yes. Yeah, except for the initiation of the discussion about Article 13. The minutes look good. We should maybe make just a one sentence.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we could.
Summary of that.
We can, something like Article 13 on layoffs was discussed.
Yeah, or the rationale for beginning negotiations on that was discussed. It's more about the background, really.
Yeah. Okay, we'll add that. They'll revise the minutes, and they look good, other than that.
Yep.
Good. All right, John, Barbara, we have a proposal for Article 16 and one for 19.
Oh, okay, good.
I see on the wall there's a audiovisual thing. I don't know if you want to do that first. Is that something we're going to do today?
No, let's keep our normal sequence and do this first. And then.
I just didn't want to preempt anything if you had something planned.
No, because you just hit two of the three things I was going to ask about.
Are we taking?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll do that in a second. It's a broadcast delay. This is collective bargaining on December 17th, 2014.
Give that to Stacy.
Thanks.
As you can see, there's a liberal use of red and green.
And blue. Festive.
And blue.
But this is... The greens are just moves, right?
The green, well, employee assistance program has moved from 16.8 up to in front of job abandonment, and
I think that was already on your.
Yeah, I think so too. I was trying to track what we had.
Because I didn't have, I did the initial. Yeah, these things go through several drafts, as you know, on your team. So, and I was moving things around, and then. So I was in one color, and then it went to my trusty companion down there, Charlie, who started making changes, and as other people and gave their feedback. And so depending on whose computer and whose printer was working on it at the time, that's why you get different colors of ink. And since we didn't have a Word version of what you put on the table, we worked from the original
the
16 and just... tried to track your changes and then add our own.
So the.
That's why I need yours.
Yeah, I sent it to you this morning.
I know.
So the counseling is brought up to its own section.
Yeah, because it, since it isn't actually discipline, we moved it ahead of the discipline section.
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. What's the difference between a letter of counseling and a letter of instruction? Are those synonymous or?
Pretty much.
Used interchangeably?
They're used interchangeably.
There was a history of using the term instruction for many years. That goes back to, you know, 5, 6 years ago. And then we had a conversation with Claudia when she was the grievance chair. And she pointed out that, she asked the same question as, you know, we use instruction and counseling interchangeably. And she said, you know, it specifically references the term counseling in the collective bargaining agreement. So she and I agreed from that point on, we would just use the term counseling.
So can we strike out the or instruction part then?
Why? Why? I mean, we can use both, don't you think?
Well, Ronnie's saying we don't.
Well, right now we don't, but we would, I think, if we, I mean, she agreed to do, to take out the word instruction and replace it with counseling because.
As a courtesy,
but there's no reason to say that. Strike it. I mean, they're kind of used interchangeably, so it sort of encapsulates both of them is the idea.
But if we're only using one, it's just to sort of streamline it, so there's not confusion on the part.
We don't want to use letter of counseling and not have it be in the contract because then we do not know its status.
Right.
So if we use them, we should have them in the contract. If we don't
I would
use
like to
them,
use both words. I think letter of counseling.
Don't you think? Because there's limited. If they're being used by someone, somewhere, then we should do something about it in the contract. Because if not, it hangs out there. And
I think what Ronnie was saying is that it was years ago that instruction was used, but now counseling is used. So.
Right. We actually preferred instruction, but we use counseling to agree with. Because the word counseling was used earlier.
Okay, well, maybe this is another consideration. Even if we're not issuing letters of counseling today, a letter of instruction might exist somewhere as a historical document.
True.
In a file, and we would want that to have a designation.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So, because a lot of this has to do with how you can. Like if somebody had a letter of instruction in their file and they had a discipline and someone tried to bring it into an arbitration, somebody, I guess, could say, well, it says letters of counseling may only be used as evidence of knowledge, but it doesn't say letter of instruction.
Okay. So that just got moved up.
Explain the difference between the blue and the green and the red.
No difference. Different people.
Yeah, it's just
different computers, people. Actually.
I see.
Different computers.
It looks fairly similar to what we had, but why don't we just, we'll look at it on our side in a caucus?
Yeah, that's good.
Just to verify it, and then.
Good.
We can decide where to go from there. So those two side by side.
Okay. We always have a problem with four and strikeouts because it goes right through the line. Mm-hmm.
Can you share this?
Mm-hmm. One, thank you. I need one.
I've got my copy.
Because I'm going to give this to you.
Thank you very much.
Sure. So this is Article 19. Sherry, how's this? Is this formatted from the contractor or from?
This is formatted from the
We didn't have theirs.
Yeah. So everything we had, all we had to work with was the current contract language.
Okay. So the major changes from your end are the ones that have the little hash marks out in the
margins are.
Yeah. It looks to me as if the the second and third are grammatical.
Yeah, you found a witch that we overlooked the last time. There's one more witch to be hunted down.
Right.
Yes.
And then in an effort to sort of better define outside activity, the bold language is new.
Okay, so could you explain the rationale for 19.4A for that particular change?
I think the problem is that we want to make sure that people report that it's not left, even now, it's not left up to the employee to determine whether something's a conflict of interest or commitment. So in it's the whole chain of people that gets reviewed by, as you know, when you fill out your conflict of commitment report.
Right.
So, and there was a question raised last week that an employee might reasonably conclude something, but you know, that wouldn't necessarily, if it was an unreasonable employee, it might not reasonably, that might not be reasonable. So we just changed that to that could be reasonably be concluded to create a conflict of interest.
So the test would be whether a reasonable person would conclude that something should be reported.
Not necessarily the person who's actually filling out
right.
the report.
Right. So could we substitute that language, that a reasonable person could conclude? Would that be acceptable? Just because this is passive voice and there's no subject there.
We could talk about a caucus, but that's certainly a suggestion we'll take up and respond to, John, because that's our intent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And then also in the very first line of that, we remember last time we discussed the including but not limited to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's still the not but not limited to part makes it so indefinite. Do we really need that? I thought last time we at least had come close to agreeing that maybe we could strike
well,
that.
when will you caucus to consider these two? Will caucus consider the feedback on 19.4.
Okay. So I just had one other thing I wanted to check up on, which was the very small change we proposed in Article 2 on consultation from the very first session.
I think that's going to be very problematic because it is so hard to get all the parties that have to be involved in these every time we do one. I mean, it takes a massive amount of scheduling to do it, and particularly with the new provost who is just booked every minute of every day right now, I think that's going to be not something that he's going to be willing to sign off on, at least this round, let's put it that way.
Okay, I understand your position on that. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. I guess we not only have to work with all of your side of people to find out days and times when you can be available. Frequently, we have to, you want people at the table who can explain things to you that you've asked questions about.
Yeah,
and
so
that involves
a lot more
people.
Yeah.
And then we have to meet with the president and provost before we attend consultation, and trying to get on the president's schedule is even worse than trying to get on the provost's schedule. So.
Okay, understood on that. The difficulty there. It's just
it doesn't mean that we can't have informal consultations, and I think we've used those to fairly good advantage twice this past semester. So,
well, that was the momentum that we were hoping to ingrain into the CBA.
That's about a specific issue, though, right, Sherry?
Uh-huh.
Those were about a specific targeted issue.
Yeah. Which is fine. You know, we can do those at any time.
All right. Well, it's now a good time for a caucus?
Yeah.
Sure.
Check the tape. You asked for those.
how long do you think we should?
15 minutes?
We
don't need a long time.
But if you want longer, that's fine.
How about, I think, 15 or half an hour?
Do we want to do anything else before we, because if they want to do this presentation, these people can go.
Well, that's why we're just going to take a short caucus.
Let's just do 20 minutes.
20 minutes is fine.
20 minutes, that's fine.
Would result in 19.4A reading as an employee who proposes to engage in outside activity that a reasonable person could conclude to create a conflict of interest.
All right.
We can, like Charlie said, if we see something else. All right. All right, I won't say which. That could. Is that right?
Okay.
Yes.
I think so. I'd be tempted to say that a reasonable person concludes, creates, as opposed to concludes to create, but.
Isn't that what you said?
But that's fine. Yeah,
could conclude to create.
Because it's about the reporting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we had.
I can revise that during the next caucus if you want.
Okay.
For TA.
So we had a question actually up on 19.2A about the definitions. And so our question is more about the part in bold and the mm-hmm. part listed as examples.
Okay.
And so our concern is with service activities in general that faculty would often include, on their annual reports. And so, you could imagine that someone could participate in a civic or a charitable organization as part of their professional service too. And so are we intruding on that?
I think that's why we use the language other personal commitment. As opposed to professional commitment.
Mm-hmm. I think it also says that is not part of the employee's assigned duties.
And if it's service, it might be assigned.
Well, our service tends not to be assigned. It tends to be just really broad and sort of almost ad hoc in a lot of cases. Yeah, broad categories.
But we get to choose what that might be and report it on our annual report.
Well, I think that we were trying to respond to your concerns that the prior language was too broad. Frankly, we were happy with the prior language, so if you know,
throwing it back to us.
Well, we're trying to figure out what would be acceptable because, we're...
Well, we're just asking. If it was something that would be reported on your annual report, then it's not. Considered.
If it's something that would be considered service on your annual report, I would say, well, I'm not the academic. I better shut up.
I think the whole reason that we have a group that reviews the reports is because they are the ones that are the objective reviewers trying to determine if it meets the level of expectation for what a conflict is. There are lots of things that people put on their annual reports that sometimes don't even belong there. And so my concern is if we say, yes, if you put it on your annual report, it's a waiver. I don't think we should agree to just saying it's on the annual report. It can't be a conflict of interest. That's why the whole process is set up for an objective group to review it and say, that might represent a conflict of commitment or of interest. The other thing is, keep in mind that just because people are required to report things doesn't mean that the university compliance office is necessarily going to say it's a conflict. So what they're asking for here is please report it, and then you'll get a response back saying whether or not it represents a conflict or commitment of interest.
Well, we're trying to determine, so we don't want to have the opposite problem, where now everybody's reporting everything, and then the office, that's not in anybody's best interest either. Then people are reporting things that they really don't need to, and then the office has to review them, and that's burdensome. So I'm just trying to find maybe.
I think they actually prefer that. In fact, in the instructions, it says revised instructions is a very liberal language. It's very liberal language that says, you know, when in doubt, please report it, and we will get back in touch with you. We actually had a conversation with the director of that office when we received your revised, you know, your recommendation, your proposal, and she indicated that they would actually prefer that you report it when in doubt. She said that keeps everybody out of trouble that way. If you think it could be, just go ahead and report it.
The other item that occurred to us as we were talking about is that this article is a little funny in its organization again, where we start off with the definitions and we start off with the one that's actually a kind of a subordinate to definition. Outside activity doesn't arise until conflict of commitment down below. So maybe just put that down below. Start off with 19.3, that here are the conflicts that are prohibited. Conflict of interest means this, conflict of commitment means that, and outside activities, that this whole part about outside activities are really giving examples of what would constitute potential conflicts of commitment, right?
Well, private consulting, additional teaching can be a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, or private consulting, you know, depending on private practice, depending on, you know, what discipline you're in, the kind of the amount of money you're making off of that, you know, there's a threshold.
Understood. Yeah.
Yeah. That we all have to meet.
What do you think, caucus for 5 minutes? Could we have just another brief caucus?
Sure.
Okay, we're amenable to the revised language that you just wrote here at the table on Article 19.
Okay.
And so I believe if you've got clean copies, we could TA both articles.
Well, I don't have clean copies yet. If you want to give me the one he wrote on, and then I will make that change during our next caucus.
I don't think we have it.
We don't have it.
I gave it back to Mo.
You can have this, but just
there it is.
Okay. Hand it over to Charlie.
No problem.
Because we would never think of it be able to recall.
Well, I did write it.
We could never recreate it now.
Yes.
We'd have to start from scratch.
But I don't know that they pick up all the nuances of when we're scratching. Because we're kind of talking under our breath.
Okay.
Okay, so let me just get on my notes.
All right, and then there's 16. Do you have any questions about that, or do you want to hold off on that? Or?
No, we will.
Okay, they're going to TA on
Yeah, we'll
them.
TA 16.
Oh, good, okay, good, great. Well, if I have another 16, we could do it.
Do you have enough copies?
No.
I have
here's
one.
Here's a 16.
Huh? Should we make it a clean copy?
Oh, you mean like without the...
Okay, I can do that. I can accept the changes during the next.
Okay.
In the next caucus, okay.
Yeah, Ronnie gets my initials. Have a lot of
got it.
Colors
got, it. Got it.
Not.
All right. Is it now time for?
I think it is. All right. So just as a prelude to this, as you know, in our faculty survey that we conducted. I think back in October, it was quite some time ago, we asked faculty about what their concerns were as we were coming to negotiate the full CBA. And one of the concerns that was very high on the list was with family and parental leave policies. And so what we wanted to do today is not present any formal language.
Okay.
But to just provide some research that Giovanna has done and others that summarize really where UCF stands relative to other universities within the state, universities, comparable universities outside the state, and even to worldwide comparisons.
Okay.
And to just to bring up some of the issues that parents and others are dealing with on campus.
Okay.
Some of which undoubtedly will be elements that we'd like to discuss at the table. Others may be more suitable for consultation.
Okay. Good. And you know, I don't know how this gets picked up, so maybe if after the presentation is over, if someone could send us a copy of the presentation.
He's going to burn it onto this disk.
He is.
Yeah, and I brought a few hard copies too,
okay,
in
good.
Case folks wanted to keep notes. I just
Great.
A few copies.
All right, thank you, John.
So yeah, you probably want to be close to the microphone there.
I'm going to give, here. I'll watch the screen.
I just have to keep a record, so.
It's like the movie Clue or something. The lights come on. Mike is gone. Shot in the dark. They turn off the lights, everyone runs out of the room, right?
That's good.
That's good.
We're just being impatient.
Okay. That's better. It takes the harsh glare off.
Yeah. You need it near the screen, though.
Okay, I think the fluorescence off your dad.
Better.
It's fine.
Yeah, that's good.
It's good. It's good.
It's good. Stop. Oh, yay. Yeah, yeah.
Perfect. Perfect.
Okay. All right. So I'll begin. Hi, I'm Giovanna Pinella from the History Department, and I thank everyone for coming here to listen or to allow me to present today on family leave. So today I'm going to begin with a brief overview of family issue in the United States, because it is a hot topic among many private and public institutions across the United States. And then we'll continue with my research of asking, qualitative research of asking UCF faculty about their experience with family leave at UCF, and also what they would like to see at UCF when it comes to family leave. I also have some comparisons across state universities to compare what other state universities have with UCF. I also discuss gender inequities at UCF, and you'll see some of the charts, and a lot of that data comes from institutional knowledge at UCF. And then I'll conclude with the rationale of why we need family leave at UCF. So I begin here with family leave in the United States. The United States is kind of rare in the fact that it is a developed nation without any type of family leave. As of 2011, 178 countries have guaranteed paid maternity leave under national law. Only three countries offer absolutely no guarantee of paid maternity leave, Papua New Guinea, Swaziland, and the United States. And because of this reason, there is a significant amount of research done about what happens when you don't have family leave. Which has helped a lot of my research, because there's already Human Rights Watch, the New York Times, a lot of investigative journalists have looked into the emotional and physical cost to the family. And also there's a series of surveys as well, is asking U.S. voters, for example, do you want family leave? As of in a 2010 survey of registered U.S. voters, 76% endorsed laws providing leave for family care and childbirth. 69% endorsed paid sick day laws, and 82% also wanted stronger laws against discrimination and unfair treatment at work, because they felt they were receiving that once they announced that they were pregnant or having small children at home. Family leave in particular affects women And also, there's two things that go on. For most women, unpaid leave is not really an option. As of 2009, some studies have shown that 39% of mothers were the primary breadwinner. So it's not an option to just take unpaid leave, which is what the FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, provides. It provides unpaid leave, but it's not sufficient. Also, 63% of women are also co-breadwinners who contribute at least a quarter of family earnings. Just recently, over the past weekend, the New York Times investigative journalists also had an article called, there were actually two articles. One was Why Men Are Not Working, and another one was Why U.S. Women Are Leaving Jobs Behind. Now, the one about men, why they were not working, was a series of many reasons why they were not working, from disability to other problems, not being able to find work, having a criminal record. Whereas for women, all the women who were interviewing and why they were leaving jobs, it had more to do with not having family leave. A lot of them just found it to be too much pressure to be able to work and also tend to their children. So with the, you know, a lot of this interested me, and I also went and started surveying, I'll bring this into the UCF, started surveying, this is just interviewing different parents on campus. I wanted to make this survey also as inclusive and diverse as possible. So the survey on parental leave, you know, there was five simple questions, which I'll go through in a minute, but I wanted to show that this was also represented. So the represented colleges are College of Arts and Humanities, College of Sciences, Engineering and Computer Science, COPA, College of Public Health and Administration, Library, College of Education, and Center for Distributed Learning. A number of respondents was 15, males were 3, female 12. The number of pregnancies represented here is 16. And so the numbers sometimes don't, you see 16 or 15 on the side, but that just has to do because one woman in particular, for instance, told me that her first two childbirths, she had not known that there was any type of leave available at UCF, which found it interesting. So the questions were very simple. Did you know about UCF parental policies when you got pregnant? 11 said yes, 5 not initially, did not know about that. When I asked them, how did you find out about them, what's interesting on the second line is that people were finding the information all over the place. There is no central place where people can find out if there's leave. So I got different answers from like just a general Google search. And what's interesting here too is that about 5 people went to human resources and another 5 people, equal amount, just heard it from office talk of previous parents. So they just heard, just basically gossip in the hallways. Did you ever request parental leave? Those 9 requested parental leave. No, 3 did not, for a variety of different reasons, did not request it. And 4 either are not pregnant yet or are thinking about having a family, but they have not yet done it. And did you have any challenges in experiencing parental leave? For the majority of those who did ask, was 8 had some sort of challenge. And the challenges could be anything from just having a very hostile conversation with the dean or the chair about parental leave. There's also a lot of women who talked about the director, Linda Walters. She's director of the Center for Faculty Women, Success for Faculty Women. They actually had, because it was such a hostile environment or they felt like they weren't gonna get what they wanted, they actually, Linda Walters has been going around campus playing a sort of like mediating role, almost like an internal lawyering to help people negotiate a parental leave or some sort of parental leave policy. The last question I had asked is what they would like to see as a family-friendly policies at UCF. And the answers depended, because there is a long list here, the answer depended on how well-informed the person was. Some of it also depended on if they had arrived from another school, another state school, they understood what they had experienced previously. If they were active on the job market and they were seeing what other school offers had as a recruitment package. Some schools apparently are also offering, in addition to monetary, they also talk about their family leave benefits. And the last one was also personal situation and experience of what people would, this is what led them to believe and what they would like to see in family-friendly policies. Because of all the answers, I categorized them into 4 categories. One is duties and monetary. So there's 15 respondents here. One of the top things people would like to see is 6 to 8 week paid leave, a no teaching semester by having some sort of modified instructional duties so that they could have that no teaching semester. And I'll just go over the big categories. Child care was another major issue, to have some sort of subsidized child care or a child care grant if the creative school was full. The creative school is the daycare on campus, but it largely serves students, not faculty. and that's largely because I think 50% of it is covered by student government funds. Other no-cost items for family-friendly policies is people would like to see some family-friendly bathrooms, changing tables in the UCF bathrooms. And it was true that I think someone who had come from other state schools, they had that at their in their other universities. Also, a lot of people talked about attitude shift by the administration. They felt the word was infantilicide or made to feel like a child. So when they would pronounce that they were pregnant, they were basically taken along a lot of different emails with a lot of different people they didn't even know that were talking about her, but no one was really asking about, you know, what she would like. And of course, as several people said, like, wow, if someone had just said congratulations to me, it would have just changed a lot. Other things that people talked about, family-friendly policies, is being truly diverse and inclusive. It is our mission statement at the University of Florida. And a lot of it applies to students, but then it should also apply to faculty.
UCF,
what did I say?
University of Florida.
Other things people would like to see was dual career policy, adoption aid, so to include in family leave policy, language also that includes people who adopt. And also, if it's family leave policy, to also provide language that also helps people to take care of ill spouses or a parent. And the last one here that I highlighted was a couple of people talked about removing the pregnancy penalty. So there was examples where women, the semester that they were pregnant, they took their 6 to 8 weeks, they returned, but then they were not allowed to apply for an Excellence in Teaching Award, or they were told not to apply because they had taken that leave. Now, these charts here are comparing UCF with other state universities on their family-friendly policies. And the categories at the top were provided by these state universities. These are things that they provide. And I did state universities by those who provide the most, and then those who provide the least is on the next page. So some of the best that provide parental leave policies, modified instructional duties, tenure clock extension. There's also a telecommuting option. Only one university offered that. That was University of Oregon. Child care facilities, paid family leave emergencies, employment assistance for spouses, nursing time and facilities on campus, and also family life website. UT Austin, University of Michigan, and University of Illinois seem to have the best policies for that. University of Oregon also had very good policies. In addition to that, it also had a telecommuting option where professors could, instead of having to come in for a departmental meeting, they could Skype into meetings. So also using video conference, a lot of our new technologies that we could use. So people don't have to physically be there, but they would still be part of something. UC System also had a very good system. And University of South Florida has paid parental leave, modified instructional duties, and the tenure clock extension is automatic there, as opposed to being upon request. These schools had less. But they still had something related to modified instructional duties. So Florida Atlantic had paid parental leave. It also had modified instructional duties and a tenure clock extension upon request. And then University of Wyoming, Arizona, University of Florida do not have paid parental leave, but they do have transparent modified instructional duties. In the language, when they talked about family leave, it was the idea that you would take a no teaching semester by reassigning your duties. Same with University of Florida. Now, University of Central Florida, it has no paid parental leave, and the problem with modified instructional duties is it's very ad hoc. It really depends on the department chair and who your college dean is. The tenure clock extension is upon request. The child care facilities, even though there is a daycare on the campus, it is largely for the students, that they take priority over faculty. There are 5 nursing centers, and there is a Facebook site that is new for parents. I wanted to outline a few things for UCF. The first one is that the student government at UCF has passed a series of progressive pro-family policies, including paid 6-week parental leave for graduate students, a subsidized child care grant, and it also provides a $1,000 scholarship for single parents. And also, another thing too, because of the ad hoc modified instructional duties, as I said earlier, Linda Walters has been playing a very busy role in going from, I guess, department to department, college to college, and helping women, and also men in some cases, to try to negotiate some sort of modified instructional so that they don't have a teaching semester, or they can have something that they can work with together. Now, in these charts, Because there was a question of, like, I wanted to see, well, why don't we really have family leave policies? A lot of state universities now have them. Our own, you know, student government has a lot of policies that they're passing. And I wanted to see the total ratios of male to female faculty. And actually, for UCF, this is quite impressive. And 59%, this is all colleges, all faculty. We have a total here of 1,641 faculty, male and female. 59% are male, 41% are female. By a lot of national standards, this is actually quite good. The problem here, and here when we start to see what kind of role women play at UCF, is we do see them in roles that are not tenurable, so playing more roles in, like, instructor, lecturer, and assistant professor. So they're overrepresented in ranks where they might feel, and I've also heard this from many women on campus, where they felt they didn't quite have a voice or to make trouble by asking for family leave. And they're underrepresented in professor and associate roles relative to male faculty. In this next chart here, I narrowed it down to just three colleges: the College of Science, the College of Engineering and Computer Sciences, and the College of Arts and Humanities. And here, it's the same trend. Here you have 760 professors. It is a similar trend where women are overrepresented in the instructor and lecturer positions, and then in the assistant professor as well. And here also, when you talk about the sciences, engineering, they're direly underrepresented in the professor and associate professor ranks. That's when they have tenure and perhaps feel a little bit more secure in their position to be able to ask for things for like leave. Now, some of the reasons, because I'm not arguing that UCF only hires women as instructors and lecturers. Some research, independent research of women instructors and women lecturers across the United States has shown, there's this one book called Do Babies Matter? Gender and Family in the Ivory Tower. And they talked about the fact that some women actually chose these positions specifically because they thought of it as being able to take a timeout. Since their institution lacked family-friendly policies, they were able to, for instance, take some time away if they were adjuncting or instructorships, which didn't require research and service. So some of the gender inequities could be explained because of a lack of family leave policies. Now, this one here, this is just really what I wanted to show with the age group categories. And this is, again, just the three colleges. We are overrepresented right now between 41 and over. But with, you know, the idea that in the future, with 100 new faculty and then 100, in addition to that, another 100 replacement factory, if we are hiring in the ranks of instructor, lecturer, and assistant professor, we could presume that the levels between the ages of 21 and 40, which is usually the ages when people have their children, that number is also going to increase potentially by 200. So then in the future, we do want to think about having family leave policies and having that sort of package for our new faculty that are coming in, not just for the ones that are already in place. And my last slide here is to think about why have a family leave policy. There have been a lot of studies about retention and productivity growth. One of them is, the first one is to think about improving life for families at UCF. And if we think of it, the burden of family life is usually on women, also improving the life of women. But other state schools have also talked about considering family leave as part of faculty retention and productivity program. National studies have shown that if there is a sort of family leave policy, people are more likely to return to that same employer. One study, for instance, found 94% of leave takers who received full pay during family leave returned to the same employer, compared to 76% of employees. And in another study on productivity growth across 19 OECD countries over a long span, 1979-2003, found that when you had paid parental leave, there was a significantly greater positive effect on productivity than unpaid leave. And they were able to also do the numbers and figure out that instituting 15 weeks of paid maternity leave would increase multi-factor productivity by 1.1%. And some of the reasons for that would be that the person gets to recover. It's all from their childbirth. Also for men, it helps because they also have part of the bonding with the family. And in general, it helps everybody, the mother, the father, and also babies when there is some sort of family leave policy. Well, thank you. That's what I have.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions?
I just had one teeny comment.
Okay, go ahead, Charlie.
Can we turn the lights back on? Oh, thank you.
We're working on it.
Just that you had tenure upon request, you could get a tenure credit. We actually, it is actually a guaranteed benefit.
It's automatic?
Look at 17.4.
Oh.
But it is on request, though.
No.
Really? Because it was actually Linda Walters and several other people who said it was upon request.
Yeah, it's by mutual agreement.
You can only get rid of it by mutual agreement.
Right, yeah.
So it's automatic unless you get rid of it.
That's a good thing, because there were several women who were pregnant out and did not know this, and they thought, and they were given paperwork, and I was told by someone, they said they got paperwork and they would have to actually sign up for tenure credit.
I think it helps clarify the process and lets people know officially, but mm-hmm. they have the right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So, as you can see, we think the timing is really good, especially with the new hires coming in from not just the faculty recruitment aspect and the retention aspect, but also from the productivity aspect. And actually, can we go back one slide, Johanna? So, one of the things that really struck me when I looked at Ivana's presentation is that last line, and you think about, okay, productivity went up by 1%, and that seems like a small number, but as a guy who used to do experiments with 30,000 tadpoles at a time, where 30,000 was plus or minus zero, it was 30,000 exactly because we triple counted them, you learn really quickly, you know, that each individual adds up over time. And so, for example, with that productivity increase, if that had been operative during UCF's entire lifespan, even though we're a young university, that would have increased productivity by 75% just in this duration of 50 years. And so those little incremental changes make a big difference. The other thing that isn't in here is that some universities that have started these paid leave programs have set aside a pool of money to pay for them. And the numbers are usually around 0.1% of the faculty pool. So if you think about it as a cost-benefit ratio, the expected benefit is 1.1%, the expected cost is 0.1%. So you're getting an 11 times return on the investment, and that's huge. And so I think that we have an opportunity to really increase the productivity of the university, to increase its competitiveness in attracting new faculty and retaining the faculty we already have, and trying to reverse this gender inequality, which is it's just crippling us, especially in the STEM fields. I mean, we have 80% women in graduate school in the STEM fields, and we can't even get to 50% on the faculties. And so that's just a huge lost talent pool. And so I think we've got a real opportunity to change that. And so we do intend to propose changes, but as you could tell from the presentation, even if you just focus on the parental leave part and you think about what are all the possible ways for a newborn child to enter into a faculty member's family, you know, there's childbirth, there's adoption, there's foster care, there's an orphan that you're caring for of a relative, there's all sorts of different permutations there. What sorts of parents do we have? Single parents, married parents, and so on. And you start putting those combinations together, it needs really diverse language and really inclusive language. And as we've been trying to assemble this on our side, we're finding out that it's a challenge to make sure that we're including all those elements. So obviously we need to get a lot of input from faculty. There are already some offices. Linda Walters' office is already doing some of this. So one of the things we would suggest, maybe it might be useful if we explore this issue together, sort of the same way that we're tackling the layoffs clause, where we realize we've got problems and let's step through it and try to find solutions that work for everybody. So I don't know what your initial thoughts are on that, or if you're...
Actually, I will, I'll jump in here because Mike doesn't know this, but I've had a conversation with the provost about this very topic. And I presented, I gave him a summary of what I didn't realize. As of right now, well, as before yesterday, I guess, we had 5 state universities that offered some form of parental leave. And I gave him a summary of what each one did, what they offered. And Mike tells me that yesterday or this
last week,
or last week that West Florida joined that group. So I don't know what their plan is. I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet. But the provost does see this as an important issue. He sees this as something that does impact our ability to hire and retain good faculty. He's very interested in putting together some kind of program. Of course, you know, the devil's in the details and in money. You know, that's the issue because we're putting in a lot of, you know, there are a lot of things that we're trying to do this year in terms of hiring faculty and, you know, I also brought up the concept of increasing the sabbaticals to him, and he's, you know, again, in favor of that generally. But, you know, at some point, there's only so much you can do. But I will say that his initial reaction was very positive. And, you know, he's looking forward to seeing what we can perhaps mutually agree to and what maybe the president might, you know. I talked to the provost, but the president's a big dog. So, you know, and of course the board of trustees would have to weigh in on anything like this. Because we're talking probably a significant financial obligation. But let me just say that he was very positive about the idea and realizes that this is something whose time has come, whether, you know, what we can do and how soon we can do it. You know, I'm not making any promises, but I just give you that positive feedback.
Understood.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I also think, Sherry, is that we can learn from the experiences that have occurred at other state universities. We don't have to start from scratch. There's contract language at several other universities that attempt to design and capture a parental leave program. So. And some have been around for longer than others. I think FSU and Florida are probably the longest in existence. And we can. I know at the University of West Florida, when we looked at parental leave, we captured the numbers and we interviewed the other schools about their experiences. So we could see what kind of usage and practice.
We've already explored what the other universities have, but that's new information about UWF.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it's good to see that it's spreading across the entire system. That's encouraging. That's very encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So all right. It's not me last.
So that's, you know, we'll look forward to working with you on that.
Okay. Thanks. Mm-hmm. That's all we have from our side.
I think that's all we have, too.
That's all we got.
All right, well, we got
happy holidays.
Yeah,
happy
we got
holidays.
Two things TA, so
thank you for the treats.
Hopefully it was worth your time coming down.